Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, or should I say hi, hi, and welcome to Eerie House Radio.
Really, Dale? Really, Dale? Did I lose you already? Did I lose you, Dale? Hey, Foggs, can you hear me? No, I think I'm the one who lost. Ah, okay. Hey, Fog. Hey, welcome back to another evening of Eerie House Radio. And boy, are we going to have fun today. Here's Dale calling in right now. And so it's just hard to tell whether I lost Dale or Dale loses me. And but once again, found here is the one and only Mr. Dale K.
No, I'm not.
Oh, sorry, wrong number.
Hello, is this the pizza parlor?
Oh goodness, I don't know that I can blame Blog Talk for this nightmare. I'm having connectivity issues, and I have been having them, so I will fess up and take the heat for this frustrating foul up as we present to you some more stories of the islands where I can go and chill and relax and not get upset.
And this damn radio!
Yes. Oh, my. Yeah, back to returning to, once again, the CBS Radio Mystery Theater for another Saturday Night Tale from there. And, you know, there's nothing better than a science fiction tale that has hot air balloons in the Civil War. I'm telling you. It's a bit, you know, when you think of science fiction, you know, and so much of the science fiction we deal here, Dale, with the Eerie House, it's, you know, so much of what we do is a lot of it's from the 50s, and even some from the mystery theater from the 70s and such, but not the 1870s, you know?
Yeah, and as we were discussing before we came on live, it calls to mind another favorite Harryhausen film, their adaptation of Jules Verne's classic tale, Mysterious Island. And I'll tell you what, that had good effects. It wasn't overkill. And I do believe you said Mrs. Binkley enjoys that one as well. Feels it's the best version?
Yeah, I acquired that for her earlier this year. And the quarantine lockdown version, yes. And, you know, she said this. She's seen other versions of this movie, and she just doesn't care for them because If for nothing else, the others, you got Ray Harryhausen for one thing, but the others are just so overdone, so overkill. And like Dale, like we have said so many times, usually with a redo of a movie and a classic movie like that, it's as much. Really, it's not about the acting that's better. It's not about the story that's better. It's about the special effects usually that are better. But in this case, the other ones, the special effects are, as you said, so overboard.
They are, and the thing about effects that I learned a long time ago, even as a nightclub disc jockey, when it comes to your best effects, less is more. Because if you keep throwing out your best stuff, it gets old. Called to mind the great chase scene with the dinosaurs in the newer version, the Peter Jackson version of King Kong. It was like, when is this dinosaur stampede going to be over? And I hate to say that because I love dinosaurs. I can't get enough of them. But there was something about that it just felt like overkill.
Yeah. And again, special effects are the only thing you can, you know, how many times do they have to stink and redo Planet of the Apes? It's never going to be any better than the script that Rod Serling contributed to. What Charlton Heston did in that and the other actors. Is the makeup going to be better? Sure. Are some of the special effects going to be better? Sure. but it's never gonna have the same impact at the very end when he sees the Statue of Liberty. It's just not going to be there. And yet, how many times has that been redone? I'm not talking about the extra movies that they went off on did and turned into the TV series, which they turned back into movies. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just redoing the basic story over and over and over again.
Yeah, Tim Burton went way off the rails on his version. It was an interesting wrinkle, not a horrible, horrible, horrible film, but definitely not where I wanted to see the franchise go. And the other recent remakes, not too bad. But will they compete with the impact that the original Planet of the Apes had? No. I agree with you, Dave,
no.
100%.
And, you know, like, every once in a while they hit one that, you know, I thought the Tom Cruise War of the Worlds did a really good job. It doesn't compare because they're two completely different films. But the Tom Cruise one was actually a little bit closer to the H.G. Wells story than what the 50s one was.
Yeah, modernized, but in terms of story structure, I'll be on that team too, Dave, with you.
I don't usually watch remakes, but a friend of mine who was dying of cancer wanted me to see it, so I sat there and watched it with him, and I had to admit, I did enjoy it.
Well, you got rewarded for your kind deed. Treated to a really good, a good version. I actually, that might be the last film I saw in a theater, and I went with the whole fam-damly, kids and the wife, and we had a pretty good time at the little theater over there, and it was great, too, because they still have a marquee at that little theater in Overland, north of me.
I did not know that. CW said The Maltese Falcon with Bogey was a remake. Was it a remake of a silent film, or was it another sound film?
I don't know. But she brings up an interesting point that as much as I don't like remakes, there are times when the remakes like Mysterious Island seem to be superior or most people find them more memorable or interesting. And The Maltese Falcon is a classic. We'll have to ask her more about that later, what the original version was.
I wanted to talk to you.
Interesting. But tonight's story, Mysterious Island, sort of a sequel in a way, which if you're not real familiar with Mysterious Island, it's a sequel in a way to 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. You'll find out more about that.
Yes. And no better way to find out about that than to delve into part one. A lot of original commercials to go with it tonight, Dale, so that makes it fun.
Yep, another bonus treat courtesy of the editing, fine editing of David Q. Binkley.
Q?
Yeah, quixotic. I don't know. And this is CBS Radio Mystery Theater, so you know it's got to be good. We'll get a little creaky door. We'll get a little of one of our favorite radio hosts. And this one is from?
Episode number 685 from July 19th, 1977.
And it'll actually start in a minute. Allegedly. Here's your musical intro.
A certain kind of real estate which is special and unique. It can be at once the best or the worst place of all to be. If you want to hide from the world, shut away everyone else, and have perfect solitude, it's the place for you. But if you love your fellow man and value human contact, as most of us do, this paradise can be the very worst kind of hell. The piece of real estate is an island. And this is the story of a very special island. Our mystery drama, The Mysterious Island, was based on the classic by Jules Verne and written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars Earl Hammond and Leon Janney. It is sponsored in part by General Electric Citizen Band Radios and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Once upon a time, there was a couple with entirely different tastes. One liked exotic things.
I'll have a banana split with chicken livers.
While the other was practical and down to earth.
American cheese on white.
Invariably, the exotic things she liked, he hated.
Oh, look at this, a corduroy rug. Don't you just love it?
No.
And the practical things he liked, she loathed.
I love it.
I hate it.
This went on at length until one day, after disagreeing on how to get there...
It's a right.
Left.
They went to a Buick dealer and were invited to inspect a Buick Skyhawk. She found the low, lean styling and things like the bucket seats and standard four-speed manual transmission exciting and exotic.
Oh, it's so exciting and exotic.
While he found the V6 engine, the practical hatchback, very down to earth.
Oh, how practical and down to earth.
Unfortunately, while they agreed on a Skyhawk, they couldn't agree on which Skyhawk.
Air conditioning.
Heater.
White walls.
Black walls.
Chrome wheels.
Hubcaps.
I want a stereo. We have a radio at home.
Buick Skyhawk. It's exotic, it's practical. It's a little Buick for everybody.
I'll drive.
I'll drive.
No, I'll drive.
I'll drive.
I'm driving.
What's for dinner has an old familiar ring. Where does a mother go for the best of everything? What's for dinner? The family wants to know. Who's got the answers? Who's got the most to show? ShopRite has.
Has a super color circular this week with extra special savings in every aisle. Choice grade boneless bottom round or shoulder roasts, 99 cents a pound. Choice grade boneless top round or sirloin tip steaks, $1.59 a pound. Red plums, 39 cents a pound. Nectarines or peaches, 3 pounds for a dollar. At ShopRite's appetizer counter, store sliced turkey breast, quarter pound, 59 cents. Bologna or liverwurst, 99 cents a pound. There's a lot more for a little less at ShopRite. So why pay more?
In March of 1865, the Union Army of General Grant had the town of Richmond, Virginia, sewed up in siege. And a curious situation developed. Within the town were many Northern prisoners, Union officers and others whose burning desire was to escape and rejoin the North. But while allowed certain liberties, the town was so strictly guarded that escape seemed impossible. However, just as their prisoners could not escape, the Southern secessionists themselves were also trapped. That is how Forster's balloon came to be manufactured. Inflated in the great square of Richmond, waiting a north wind, which arrived on March 18th with a vengeance.
What brings you out in such weather, Captain Harding?
What else, Mr. Spilett?
Escape?
Whenever the weather is bad is the time. The worse it gets, the better our chances.
Have you a new plan?
I've been approached by someone with a new idea.
Who?
His name is Pencroft. A sea captain and a navigator.
Well, we can hardly hope to escape by sea, so we have little need of a navigator.
Don't be too sure. Suppose we were to escape by air.
By air? How?
We're looking at the means right now. Forster's balloon.
Are you mad? We're not aeronauts.
I am an engineer. Pencroft is a sea captain. We have some qualifications.
And what about me?
You, Mr. Spilett. We'll have a front page story for the New York Herald. And what a newspaper story for a war correspondent to write.
As if I'm alive to put pen to paper. No, it's impossible. The craft is too well guarded, and besides, Jonathan Forster is scheduled to leave today.
With 5 heavily armed men. The gondola is packed with $2,000 in gold, ammunition, and stores. But if Pencroft is right, he will delay his takeoff.
Why?
He reads this wind as the leading edge of a hurricane. Forster won't risk it.
And you propose we should?
It's a chance that may never come again.
How many are we?
Myself, yourself, Pencroft, and his son.
How old?
A boy, but full grown. We can't very well leave Pencroft behind. It was his idea, and he won't go without his son.
Very well. When?
Tonight, after dark, at 10 o'clock. And keep your fingers crossed that the wind does not die down before then.
And so began
an incredible adventure. As a writer, it naturally fell to me to keep the record of it. And weird and unbelievable as it may seem, I have tried to keep it faithfully. The hurricane that Pencroft had forecast became a reality. And when the soldiers guarding the balloon had run for cover, that was when we made our break.
Captain Harding, do you think we dare try to take off?
It's our only chance. What do you say, Pencroft?
Ned and me was ready to set out alone. Though I know nothing of sailing a lighter than aircraft. With you along, Captain, hey, your knowledge of balloons, we're doubly ready.
Well, Gideon, are you with us?
Well, if you think I'm going to miss out on the best story of the war, you're crazy. I am with you.
All right, now listen. Luckily, the wind's blown out the gas lamps, so we've got the dark as well as the mist to shield us. But we'll take no chances, since none of us are armed. We'll split up now and each sneak up to the balloon from a different side. We meet there in 5 minutes. We're ready to cast off.
Where's the boy?
He was supposed to come from the east. I'll have to go look for him.
Give him a chance. In the meantime, all of you, help me get rid of the ballast bags.
I won't go without my boy.
Here he comes now.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to keep you waiting.
What happened to you?
It was Top. He must have broken his chain.
Who's Top?
My dog. I told him he couldn't come, but... What are they doing to him?
Oh, he's roused the guard. Pencroft, grab the boy.
I've got to go to him.
Looks like he's coming to us. Cast off the cable on your side, Gideon, while I get mine.
The dog jumped aboard. Top wants to go with
him. Bring him. Get him overboard.
It's too late. We're 20 feet off the ground already. Thank heaven we're rising fast enough to get away from their bullets. We've made it. We've escaped. We're on our way home.
Little did any of us know how long it would be before we saw that again, if ever. No words could describe the terror of the next 5 days. The full rage of the hurricane swept us through the air, tossing and turning the gondola basket like a pendulum till all of us were airsick. By night, the captain could not dare risk a descent, and by day, a curtain of swirling fog shrouded the earth. For 5 days, we rode the whirlwind, surviving it Lord only knows how, till at last, that morning, for the first time, the mist parted below us and we saw...
The sea. It's sea beneath us.
Yes, and we're falling fast.
What's that sound? There's a rent in the balloon.
The gas is leaking out.
What can we do, Captain?
Get everything overboard. Lighten her as much as we can.
What about this gold?
Over with it.
It's over $2,000.
God, it might buy us our lives. Over. Come on.
The food, Captain.
Everything, even the guns.
It isn't doing any good. We're still falling. Land, Captain. Land. Top foot first. Land.
Where?
Neb, you're right, boy. Off to starboard there.
We'll never fetch it. We're almost in the sea now.
Oh, we've got to lighten her more.
There's nothing left to get rid of.
Yes, there is. We'll cut away the gondola itself. Quick, all of you, climb up on the net around the balloon and cling to it. The wind's carrying us toward the island.
But Top, he can't
up
get up.
You go with the others, boy. I'll hand Top up to you. Here.
I got him, okay. Hurry, Captain. Hurry, we're almost on the wave top.
Just one more cable and flash.
What happened?
We took a wave broadside.
Look, it bounced the balloon up into the air. We're going to make it to land. We're going to... No, Top.
What is it, Neb?
The captain, Dad. The captain, he's gone. And Top went in after him.
It was true. A wave struck the balloon and carried away Captain Harding and the dog. And the loss of their weight had been just enough to let the collapsing balloon rise and the wind to carry it towards the land. Now, just before we came to the shore, the balloon, half inflated, fell again to the sea. And with the wind driving it and us clinging to the mesh, we were rushed to the shore, battered by the surf, fighting our way to shore, exhausted and half dead.
Easy. We'll find him.
Never in a sea like that.
Any sign of them, Gideon?
I didn't have much hope, and I was too exhausted to go far. What happened to the balloon?
As soon as we cut ourselves free, the wind took it. It's gone, too.
It's Top. It's Top. Here, boy. Come on, boy.
Top, you're alive. You made it.
The dog looks in good condition. Strange.
Something stranger.
His coat's near as dry as a bone. How could that be if he come out of the sea?
Well, he didn't. He came along the beach and... Hush, boy, hush.
Well, then that means the captain may have made it ashore, too.
I don't see a sign of him.
If only Top could tell us.
Oh, but he is, Mr. Gideon. He is. Look. He's got my sleeve, and he's trying to pull me back the way he came. He's trying to take us to the captain.
We followed the excited dog. He was leading us into the tropical jungle. Now, after fighting our way for nearly a mile, we came out in a clearing off which opened a cave. And in it, we found...
It's the captain!
Down, Top, down.
Well, I only hope he's still alive.
Captain,
can you hear me?
Neb, here, take my hat. Get some water from that stream.
Yes, Father.
How is he?
Well, he's unconscious. Oh, that's a bad gash in his head. But otherwise, he seems unhurt.
How in the name of all that's holy could he have got out of that sea, cross all them rocks, and dragged himself here?
Seems impossible. But we haven't time to worry about any mysteries now. We have to try to bring him to. As I worked over the captain, my mind was busy with many questions. Where were we? Was it an island or a continent? Did it have inhabitants or not? And how could a man with so serious a concussion, exhausted from a long swim, have possibly dragged himself across those jagged rocks without injury and found his way a mile deep into this tropical jungle to the safe haven of this cave?
I can't answer your question, Gideon. I hit the water. I was knocked half dizzy. I swam as long as I could, but the waves were terrific. And the last thing I remember was thinking I'd had it and blacking out.
You don't remember anything about getting to the beach or finding your way here?
Not a blessed thing.
And Top?
Oh, I remember his swimming beside me when I blacked out.
Yes, but he could hardly have dragged you ashore.
Hardly.
Well, you'd better rest.
Gideon, where are we?
Well, that's what I've been hoping to ask you.
I've been thinking about that since I regained consciousness. Now, traveling southeast from a starting point in Richmond at an average of 90 miles an hour ahead of the wind, my guess would be some 7,000 miles away and somewhere in the Pacific.
7,000 miles?
Well, the distance is less important, perhaps, than the direction. The question is where we are here. Is it the South American continent, the Asian, the Australian, or is it an island?
I can answer that. We seem to be marooned on a desert island.
A desert island?
How's the captain?
Well, much better, as you'll see, Neb. What luck?
All kinds of luck. Unbelievable.
Washed up on the shore, lashed to two barrels which kept it afloat, a great sea chest full of all sorts of tools and weapons and clothes.
Maybe more important, two wooden crates. One full of tinned goods, the other ship staples. Coffee, flour, dried beef and the like.
It's incredible. Washed ashore from some shipwreck?
Well, maybe, only... Well, you tell them, Father.
All I could say is them rope lashings hadn't been in the seawater long.
Someone or something, we think, left those stores for us.
And I know for sure I couldn't have saved myself. I had to have help. Divine or...
Now, just a minute. If anyone's saying that some supernatural influence hovers around the island...
All I'm saying is what I see and what I know...
Mysterious island with its unknown benefactor who seems to protect our castaways. Is he real or imagined? And can he still protect them from all the dangers yet to come? If he exists, will they ever meet him face to face? I shall return shortly with Act Two.
We'll save money for you, Act Two, guys.
going to be a super summer, and two guys would like to help you get the most out of it with the most in photographic supplies and film developing. So when you get ready to go on that long-awaited vacation, if you're having a picnic in the park or it's the little one's first summer at the pool, make sure you have all the film and flash cubes that you need. You'll find it all at Two Guys Camera Department, and after you've shot your pictures, be sure to bring the film back to Two Guys for developing. You'll find fast, reliable service and low, low prices. Plus, Two Guys even gives you a guarantee. If you don't like your prints for any reason, your money will be refunded just like that. Plus, Two Guys returns your prints with a special Pro Touch satin finish for brighter, sharper pictures. You get twice as much value in film developing at Two Guys.
We save money for you at Two Guys, naturally.
I wonder how many people work at that place.
Yeah, just two guys.
Yeah, probably. I would imagine.
I love these old commercials, you know, especially from other areas, and you get to hear some of their local sponsors in there, like two guys, you know?
Yeah, I thought, you know, until we started doing this, I thought I was the only guy on the planet who had thoughts like that, just wondering about other people, other areas, what their commercials were like, what their local hosts were like. And,
yeah.
Of course, with all the yep. horror hosts and stuff we've met over the years, quite a few.
Yes, yeah, and that's just such, and I know that Gar is so fascinated with that by all the internet research he does to find the different horror hosts from the different areas and talk about the ones that he remembers and things like that, and what the rich treasure trove we had here in Cleveland. So, yeah,
that we did, and we've certainly gone over that a few times.
Yep.
We do have a great story. I just love the classic and early sci-fi stuff like H.G. Wells, like Jules Verne. And it might be hard for today's audience to imagine the forward thinking that they had back then, because they prognosticated things like traveling to the moon, different and strange new sciences to them then, and how they weaved it into this great, not just a sci-fi tale, it's an adventure tale, and it's a human story too.
Oh, you know what, I think I've mentioned that before myself. I'm just amazed at both H.G. Wells and that from their time, I mean, we're talking, this is just post-Civil War, and the things that they come up with is so far out of this world, that you know, people wouldn't even think, you know, people would have no idea something like this could even like the Lost World and things like it, where they find a plateau with dinosaurs on it that survived, you know. It's just things that are so even interesting today, but we're so just absolutely believable. Essentially a nuclear submarine, which was almost what the Nautilus was.
If not intended to be a nuclear submarine, certainly comparable in many similar aspects.
Yeah, yes. So it's, to me, I'm just always amazed that we bring those two masters in and the stories that they share. And even, you know, it was Conan Doyle that brought in the Lost World. So these are, you know, they put it in the setting of the day and yet can find a way to almost make it seem believable to us. But just thinking in the late 1800s, how believable could that be? It'd just be so far-fetched that you'd think that they were insane.
Well, you know, when they were writing, the world was a smaller place, too. And there could be that remote island that has, you know, a crazed captain who wants world peace, or perhaps a giant 50-foot gorilla or prehistoric monsters roaming about. Maybe there could be, because we haven't looked at the entire surface of the globe. The world was a much larger place than it is today. And it's harder to write that kind of adventure without it being a period piece.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it does what makes this thing work as an adventure. You know, here are some guys an escape from a Civil War prison camp, and doing it. You know, can you imagine? I myself am a bit afraid of heights, Dale. The older I get, the more nervous I get with that kind of a thing.
Same
and
here.
And yet here are these guys that are going up in a balloon in a storm, a rain thunder storm. You know, no, I'll stay prisoner. Thank you.
I don't know. You know, without having been a POW of any kind yet. yet.
Well, and I guess when you think of the atrocities that happened in Andersonville, I think was in Georgia, where, you know, some of the Northern Civil War soldiers were taken, were just absolutely horrendous, the conditions there. But but I don't know what it would take to get me up in a hot air balloon during a storm.
One never knows. You know, the things you thought you'd never do are the ones that maybe even come the easiest when an emergency strikes. You never know.
And you could be very right on that, yes.
But I promise not to push you to find out.
As long as you don't push me out of that balloon.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I'm not going there.
All right. Well, it sounds like, in CW, it did, when I first heard that, it did sound a lot like Howard Da Silva as well. But I took a cheat sheet look at the cast, and it was Jackson Beck.
It is Jackson Beck. I thought so. Yeah. And then that very, very first commercial before this show started, I'm positive that was Keenan Wynn.
Yep, that was Howard Da Silva with the Buick, with the couple. Yes. That was Howard Da Silva.
Oh, okay.
Jackson Beck in the show, Howard Da Silva in that commercial.
Yeah. Well, I can't win them all.
So, and that's why I love his commercials. Howard Da Silva didn't get to do a whole lot of commercials. He had a great voice, great set of pipes.
From what
I understand, wasn't always the easiest guy in the world to work with. to make the movie, he was in the musical, Broadway musical, 1776. To make the movie, he literally had to beg the producer to let him do it. He wanted something his grandchildren could watch. And so, because he had that reputation of being that difficult to work with. And usually when they're that difficult to work with, it's because they really know what works and what's right. But that isn't necessarily what, quote unquote, the director thinks it should be, you know,
that, or they have this clear vision, you know, of what it should be. And I bet you that happens a lot with creators. You know, people who create the content. They have a really clear vision, and then someone else comes in, and the budget and this, and politically correct, and there you go, more things that butcher the creativity, but here you go.
Yeah.
But I sidetracked myself. And we digress as we continue this exciting story from Jules Verne and CBS Radio Mystery Theater with Mysterious Island. Here's part two. I hope.
Can you conceive of traveling 7,000 miles in an unguided balloon? Of being swept from one hemisphere to the other? And yet, if you'll take out a map of the world and lay an ordinary ruler from Richmond, Virginia, to the southwest, the direction that a northeast wind would blow you, you'll see you could end up somewhere south of the Hawaiian Islands in the midst of a sea that in 1865 was still largely uncharted.
If indeed some other presence invaded our island during the next month, we had no further evidence of it. We were all too busy with our various tasks, and Captain Harding with regaining his strength, to think much further about it. One morning, Neb and Pencroft set out to hunt, and I set about constructing some more earthenware pots on a wheel which the captain had designed.
Good morning, Gideon.
Morning, Captain.
It's a beautiful day.
Seems so to me. Thanks to you, Gideon.
Ah, nonsense. I've done little. Without your leadership and knowledge, we'd all have been in a bad way. Now, this potter's wheel, for example. Without it, no dishes. The magnifying glass you made from your watch crystal, without it, no fire. Oh, hundreds of other things.
Well, I'd be a poor engineer if I had no knowledge of simple mechanics. Are the others gone?
Yes, good half hour since.
Then I'd be an even poorer leader if I didn't face hard facts.
What do you mean?
We must find a better place to stay.
But, Captain, we have shelter, water. Oh, I know the insects are bad at
Gideon,
night.
So far, we've been concerned with survival. We've managed that. Now we have to consider escape.
Escape? To where?
Another island, then another. Till at last, the mainland or civilization.
But how?
We must build a boat. And to do that, we must be near the sea where it can be launched. Tomorrow, I start looking for our new home.
3 weeks later, Captain Harding had found what we came to call Granite House, which became our permanent home. I will never forget the day he first led us to it. A great granite cliff suddenly reared straight up from the beach, a sheer wall facing the sea. To the side of it, we climbed a tortuous path past a waterfall till we came to a small plateau with a small lake cupped in it. Around the lake, we followed him to an opening in the granite wall, and then through a continuously downward path till...
Seems like we're on our way back down to the beach again, except inside.
Exactly, Mr. Pencroft.
Well, we must have come a couple of hundred feet through this narrow cave, Captain.
Not much further. This is a fascinating formation. At one time, I believed the lake above and the sea itself were one, filling these caverns.
It won't come back and drown us now, will it?
No, no chance. You'll see why in a moment. Ah, now, welcome to your new home.
Why, it's huge.
And all those windows opening onto the sea.
That's why the sea no longer boils up into the lake. It broke through the granite eventually.
Oh, it must be 60 feet down to the beach.
A little less.
But if we lived here, we'd have to have all that climb up and then hundreds of feet back down again.
Not at all, Mr. Pencroft. We would build a stout door to protect our rear. Rope ladders from our windows to come and go, which could be drawn up if need be. Use the waterfall for power to help our machines and build our boat ready to be launched in the river mouth down below.
Well, I understand, Captain Harding, but do we need all that protection?
Who knows? Are we not all sure there is some other presence on our island?
We moved in, and we made it home. And we started to build our boat, the Bonadventure. Looking back over my diaries, it is hard to believe the time that passed almost unnoticed, but even harder to believe the amount of work that was done. On one of his exploring expeditions, Captain Harding had discovered the tattered remains of the balloon trapped in the treetops. These had been brought back to make sails. And at last, the great day of launching had happened, and we sailed within the lagoon, finding the Bonadventure handled very well. It was just at dusk, as we were returning to our mooring, that a strange thing happened.
Help, Neb. Come about.
What is it, Pencroft?
Darned if I know. There was an eddy there, like there might be a rock. But I... watch out to come about. Clear the boom. Tremor, Neb.
Aye, aye, sir.
No, hold a minute. Let her fall away.
Now what, Ben?
Right there, Captain, where I saw the water break like an eddy. See it? There, a bottle floating.
We came about, circling again. And sure enough, there was a bottle bobbing in the water. Penn sent Neb over the side for it, and in a few minutes, we hauled him in, wet but triumphant.
What have you got, lad?
It's just like Father said, a bottle.
Give it here.
Here you are, sir.
Let's see if we can get this cork out.
There's a message inside, or at least a paper. Can you get it, Captain? What does it say?
Just these words. Help, please. Castaway, Tabor Island, 153 degrees west longitude, 37 degrees 11 minutes south latitude.
Why? Well, that's not over 70 miles. Just over the horizon.
We could make it in this craft easily as sailing downwind.
But not all of us. It's near dusk. Head for the mooring. We'll set all our courses for tomorrow.
I won't go into the discussion that night at any length. It's enough to say that since the boat could not handle more than three people, only two of us could go. At first, the captain and Pencroft seemed the logical pair, but Pencroft proved to be stubborn. He didn't want to be parted from Neb, and I had to agree that he was right. Everything we attempted was full of danger, and our boat was at best very frail. Obviously, it could be best handled by a seaman and his son. So, uneasily, we bid them goodbye the next morning. During the day, we kept busy, but with nightfall, the captain and I returned to worry and the helplessness of waiting.
I don't like the weather.
Yeah, it looks as if there's a squall on the way, but it should blow over long before they get back.
Should I have let them go is the real question.
Another human being in trouble? What choice was there?
If he's still there.
Paper looked quite fresh. I don't think that bottle could have been long in the sea.
Thinking back, that's what worries me. Well, nothing we can do but wait.
With the fury of a demon, a tropical storm broke, and huge waves lashed at the shore below us. It was the night of the third day, and we had expected the Bonadventure back this night. Could she live in such a storm?
Where have you been, Captain?
I climbed down the rope ladder. The tide's washed all the way to the cliff. I can't get to the bonfires to light them.
Well, perhaps they haven't started back yet.
I told them to spend no more than one day, and if they found no one, to return.
Maybe they saw the storm making up and delayed.
Perhaps. Or perhaps the note in the bottle was some kind of a trick. The island may be inhabited. They may have been taken prisoner by some hostile tribe. Oh, I should never have let them go.
Oh, no, you can't blame yourself.
But I do. Particularly for not being able to get to the signal fires. In the dark, for a wind like this, they miss the island, they may be lost forever. They may... Look! Look, Gideon!
The bonfires! They're lit! They're burning!
Impossible! How could any man in this tide reach the point except by sea?
And no mortal could live in such a sea.
Look out beyond the bonfires. Can you see it winking on the sea? The riding light of the Bonaventure. And the fires will lead it straight to home.
It was the bonfires that saved Pencroft and Neb. And who or what hand had lit them was a question lost the following morning in the excitement of their news. For they had found a castaway on Tabor Island. A new member had joined our society. He was tall, a mass of hair and beard, half clad in animal skins, filthy, more beast than man, and his arms were tightly bound behind his back.
When we first reached the island, we thought there was no one there, although we did find an old broken-down shack, but that looked as though nobody lived there anymore either.
Then we found him, running on all fours like an animal. When we tried to come nearer, he attacked us. And I don't think we could have handled him if I hadn't had a pistol to bring him to his senses.
Oh, he gave me a whopper of a black eye, and we had to tie him up. He didn't want to come with us at first, and, well, he won't talk. You can't get a word out of him.
Then you don't know his name, or who he is, or what he was doing there?
That's enough. I'm British.
What's your name?
That's as may be.
You ashamed of it?
Who are you, Governor?
Captain Cyrus Harding.
Well, a military man, I...
Union Army.
Never heard of it. You American?
I am.
What are you doing on this here island?
We're castaways, just like you. Captain Pencroft, sea captain, that is. His son, Neb. And Mr. Gideon Spilett of the New York Herald. Now, you tell me. What were you doing on that island?
Oh, now that's a long story.
Captain Harding! Captain Harding, sir!
Yes, Neb, what is it?
I think you better bring your spyglass, sir. It looks like there's a ship on the horizon.
A what?
Here's the glass, Captain.
Where's my... Oh, thank you, Pencroft. Where away, boy?
East by northeast, sir. About 60 points.
By Tophet, you're right, Neb. There is a sail.
Can you make her, Captain?
She's too low on the horizon yet, but ship it is.
We're saved! We're saved!
Well, I wouldn't be too sure on that yet, sir. Not if I was you.
In the midst of their excitement, all four of them turned to the stranger among them, their wild burst of hope and enthusiasm dampened, chilled as though they'd been doused in ice water by the ominous tone of his voice. What does he mean? What enemy could the approaching ship turn out to be? I'll return shortly with Act Three.
Do I, Howard Cosell, possess a truly encyclopedic mentality? No, on the subject of CB radio, I admit profound ignorance. However, many people share this lamentable condition, so for everyone, I question General Electric. Their answers made it obvious why GE is expert in CB. Listen to the words of Andy Kynes, GE product designer.
Andy, do you think only in technical terms, or do you consider the fellow who'll be using your CB?
No, Howard, we never lose sight of him. He's why we do everything we can to make our channel numbers extra legible, why we position our controls so they're easily reached. He's why GE mics are designed for either hand. We even backlight our meters to increase readability.
Powerful arguments for GE, Andy.
The human factor in engineering. Another reason to buy GE CB. This is Howard Cosell saying GE, the name to buy in CB.
Tom, 61, lost his appetite when his sister brought a friend to lunch.
Tom, you love barbecued ribs.
Not with loose dentures, little sister.
Tom, I had loose dentures,
Listen to Lucy, Tom. She's had dentures for years.
Then I tried Ezo denture cushions.
Ezo denture cushions?
Uh-huh. Ezo's a soft temporary cushion that you press into your dentures to make them fit more securely.
No powder to dissolve?
No pasty aftertaste either. Eating so much easier with Ezo.
Lucy, we have so much in common. Where's my sister been hiding you?
You know I wanted you to meet Lucy for ages.
Until you see a dentist, eating with dentures is a lot easier with Ezo.
Extra awesomeness with these retro commercials. Thanks for leaving those in, Dave. It really adds something here.
Yeah, I think we all need a little Ezo from time to time.
That's right.
Yeah, good old Howard Cosell there with a commercial on things he knows so much about. CB radios. CB radios. Really?
Howard Cosell knew a lot. Just ask him.
Yeah. Even though he never played the game. I don't think he ever played a CB radio either.
No. They were real popular, though, in the
70s. He was great at boxing.
Radios.
And, you know, yeah, he was great at boxing on the Monday Night Football. He was really good on the recapping the games from Sunday.
Oh yeah, Howard was something of a legend there.
Yeah. Oh, I said, boy, on old Weirdness Radio, once I did a little promo to save the NFL and cure Howard Cosell, and even had Kenny Rogers coming in to do a medley of his hits. Let me see if I can get this. I don't need you. I don't need you, Lucille, even though you believed in me and I'm the coward of the county, something like that. And so, yes, it was a telethon to help cure Howard Cosell and save the NFL. There we go.
There you go. And very topical, folks. If you're from our era, you'll know exactly what that stuff refers to and the folks involved. This story is very well done. Certainly not exactly like the Harryhausen adaptation. One thing I found interesting in the film is how they, because it was the 70s, or I'm sorry, the 60s when the film came out, and they had a nice African American actor. Playing a crucial role in the film.
Yeah.
Would you not agree?
Yeah, I would agree. And actually, thinking back on it, the Radio Mystery Theater really didn't have very many African Americans in the cast, and you'd have people like Arnold Moss and people like that at times taking over some of the roles of some of the natives, that kind of a thing. And in the early 70s, I don't know how many African Americans, had a big parts on a lot of the Broadway, a lot of the off-Broadway, sure, a lot of the Broadway stuff. And Hyman Brown went with people who were either radio veterans or who were, were big time on Broadway, is what it seemed, because he had the access to that.
Yeah. But I do like the extra twist that they put on the story, addressing, the purpose of the Civil War and everything. And it was handled, I thought, in a classy way for its day. You're talking about 1961 when the film came out. But this version is just as entertaining and engaging, and in some ways better, because we get to use our own minds to color all the excitement, adventure, and danger of being marooned on a mysterious island. And we'll wrap up our story with part 3. We'll be back.
Wouldn't you love to remove unwanted hair, then not worry about it for weeks? Salons do with wax. You can too with Zipwax. Zipwax lifts hair out instead of cutting it off, so hair is actually retarded from growing back.
So why be a slave to your razor when Zip hair off for weeks?
Well, now, let's see. We left our four castaways gazing in surprise and dismay at the marooned man they had rescued from Tabor Island. But he wasn't looking at them. With his arms still bound behind him, he had moved to one of the great windows in the rock of Granite House and was squinting out to sea with a seaman's eye, his gaze fixed in the direction of the faraway sail just clearing the horizon.
What do you mean you wouldn't be too sure?
Of that ship. Till she comes a lot closer. It'll be an hour or two before she comes near enough to see what she is.
It doesn't matter what she is. She's a ship, and it means a chance to get back off this island and home.
Pencroft is right, Captain.
I'll go light the bonfires.
Plenty of time for that, my boy.
She might sheer off if she sees no sign of life here.
Not much chance of that, I should think. She could mean rescue for you four. And she could be bringing you what I'm afraid she brings me. She could be flying the Black Flag.
The Black Flag?
A Jolly Roger.
A pirate ship.
All right, everyone, let's calm down. Pencroft, take my glass and keep a close lookout on that sail. As for you, I think you'd better tell us this story of yours and make it fast.
Aye, sir. It's 10 long years since I talked to any man. The words come slow and my throat is stiff, but I'll try. As you may have guessed, my trade was the sea. But in 1855, I'd been on the beach in Australia. And in desperation to keep body and soul together, mixed up in various trades, none of them quite legal, I palled about with another no-good who in his cups more than once claimed to be the legal heir of Lord Glenarvan.
You mean the millionaire, the shipping magnate?
Yes, the same. I never paid him much heed. And one night in a barroom fight, he was knifed and killed by another Joey of mine.
Joey?
An Australian word for friend, Neb. Go on.
About a year later, this big steam yacht put into Melbourne, and it's his lordship looking for his son. Between us, Bob Joyce and myself, we saw a real opportunity to make our pile and end up rich. The plan was simple. Lord Glenarvan's ship needed to take on some crew. I was to say I knew where young Glenarvan might be found. And then, ship aboard with some men we had on our side, and enough of Bob Joyce's gold to buy enough others in the crew.
For what purpose? The boy was dead. Where could you leave them?
Just far enough to sea to take over the ship. Now, don't forget, a steam sail ship in those days in Australian waters. We'd have a freebooter which could own the seas.
What's a freebooter?
A pirate ship. And I take it something went wrong with your plan.
Yes, that's right. One of the crew I tried to buy went to the mate and threw him before Captain Gray. I'll never forget that day as long as I live.
This sailor, fully proved guilty of the crime of fomenting mutiny, shall forthwith be hanged from the yardarm as an example.
A moment, Captain Gray. May I speak to the condemned?
Of course, your lordship.
I can do little to save you, but first, my son is dead.
You can take the word of a dying man.
Who killed him?
That's not for me to say.
Give me the name of the man so I can hunt him down and perhaps I can save your life.
Well, why should I protect him now, whatever? The knife was in the back. His name is Bob Joyce.
Very good. Bob Joyce. If I find this man, would you be witness against him?
Well, that's an hard promise to make. Since within 15 minutes, I'll be dancing on the end of a yardarm.
I could intercede.
And have me set free?
No one can promise that. On his ship by maritime law, a captain is in total command. Yet, I am sure my request could save your life.
You do that, my lord. And whenever you need me, just call on me. Oh, his lordship was as good as his word, as far as it went. Oh, I was saved from the gallows. But by the captain's orders, marooned on Tabor Island for the rest of my life.
His lordship has never returned to call on you, as you suggested?
No, sir.
Why do you suppose that is?
Well, until 2 years ago or thereabout, I had supposed because Bob Joyce was dead. And then...
And then?
A ship came to call at my island. I was delirious with joy. But some sixth sense warned me. I let the boat land, remaining hidden in a secret place. Saw the men who felt I had betrayed him, Bob Joyce, and heard him. He vowed he would search every island in this area until he found me either dead or exterminated.
Well, why was he so violent against you?
Because he felt I betrayed him, condemned him to a life of piracy and fleeing the hangman.
That's why you're afraid of this ship we see bearing down on us. That it may be his ship.
Yes, Captain. Because if it is, I'll give you my word for what it's worth, that he will destroy me and all the rest of us without a single regret.
I don't think there was one of us who wasn't deeply affected by the story Ayrton told, or not convinced of his honest repentance after the punishment he had suffered. But we had little time to dwell on that, for under a steady wind, the ship was upon us sooner than we expected. Less than a mile offshore, she came about, and after breaking out the Jolly Roger...
Hold your fire.
But she fired on
the
us.
The advantage of cannon, she's beyond our range.
You're right, Captain. Don't answer her fire. It's what she's looking for.
You mean to see if the island is inhabited?
That's right, yes.
Then if we don't answer, she won't anchor and beat off again?
No. We won't be that lucky. Put some boats ashore.
Some boats?
Aye, lad. There's 40 to 50 men aboard her. Far more than we can handle. Except one way.
Which way is that?
You'd have to trust me.
To do what?
I see a spit of land going out there. It can't be more than half a mile to the ship from there. It's coming on to nightfall. Free my arms. Take me out there and I'll guarantee to swim to the ship and set off the powder magazine and blow them all to hell where they belong. And if I fail, what have you lost?
Under cover of darkness, Neb and I sneaked down with him to the point, leaving the captain and Pencroft to hold the fort. Neb and I were armed with guns to protect him if he had to make a run for it. At exactly midnight, he slipped into the water for the long swim, and Neb and I settled down to wait and pray for his safe return. In less than an hour, all hell broke loose across the water in the dark.
We got him! He was discovered!
Now that much is obvious.
He can we help him to escape?
Mostly by keeping quiet and praying. The trouble is, we never should have risked this.
Well, why?
Because obviously now they know there's someone on the island. And it won't take long to discover how few of us there are.
Well, why should they bother us? I mean, maybe they'll just sail away.
No, I wouldn't count on it. They'll have to come to shore for water. Flare of it, we could see the ship exploding literally into fragments, which burst into the air in a spray, and for a long time, like a flaming rocket, hovered, till at last all the fragments came down to the sea and hissed out. Once again, it was black. We waited tensely, and at last, we heard the splashing of a swimmer coming near. Guns at ready, we greeted...
Mr. Ayrton!
Aye, lad. Oh, give me a hand.
Here.
A long swim.
And a worthy one. You got to their powder magazine.
No, not I. They found me before I could get there.
The pirates?
It was them, all right. We've all had a fortunate escape.
Oh, thanks to you.
No thanks to me, lad.
But their powder magazine blew up.
Not through my efforts.
Well, whose?
Maybe the good gods, but some other hand than mine.
He's passed out, Mr. Gideon.
Yes. Exhaustion, I hope. Here, I'll take care of him.
How is he?
Not hurt. Just sheer exhaustion. Neb tell you about the...
Yes, and as you can see, now it's getting light. There's no trace of the ship, and...
Well, what is it?
Look, maybe that's our answer.
To what?
To the blowing up of the ship. The chest with the supplies, the bottle with the message, everything that's been happening to us since we landed on this mysterious island.
I looked, and rising from the sea was a sight I had never seen. A man, or was it a man, clothed in rubber with a great iron bubble on his head and two heavy tanks strapped to his back. Could it be human? Or was it something straight from the bowels of hell?
Yes, gentlemen. I blew up your pirate ship. I am the answer to many strange things that have happened to you since you reached this island. Yes, I am. If you will, your benefactor. Now you must help me.
But who are you, sir?
My name... Captain Harding, it is and will never be other than Captain Nemo.
Nemo? The famous Captain Nemo of the Nautilus?
And of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the same.
But I thought... Well, most people believe that you and your fabulous undersea craft were destroyed.
A belief since I shunned the company of men. I was happy for the world to accept. For all these years, I have combed the underworld of the sea alone, in peace.
And your crew?
One by one, Captain Harding, the sea, the rigors of our life, have taken their toll. At last, 3 years ago, I was left alone.
And the Nautilus, that fabulous undersea craft.
I piloted it to its grave under this granite cave you live in.
The well. You used to come up it in your diving apparatus and occupy this chamber for your own.
Right. When you came to the island, I wanted to help. I did it the best I could.
The chest of supplies and tools.
The bonfires that were lighted to bring us home.
My rescue from the sea and tops.
The bottle with the message that Ayrton was marooned on Tabor's Island.
But why? Why didn't you reveal yourself?
My history is my flight from my fellow man.
And now you choose to reveal yourself? Why?
Because I am dying. I have made my last effort in your behalf by blowing up the pirate ship. Now I ask a return from you.
What?
Buried in a subterranean chamber below this granite house of yours lies the Nautilus. I am going to it to die. Ask you to make it my coffin.
What is it you're asking?
Restore my diving equipment to me. Let me descend through the well to my rest. Besides the explosive I used to destroy the pirate ship, I brought a chest. My gift to the living. Now let me go.
Gift to the living. You may go, but where do we go from here?
I can tell you where you must go.
Must go?
At least away from this island. The forces that trap the Nautilus are again burbling. There is an eruption coming which, in my belief, will bury this island in the sea. Mark my words. As soon as I descend to my burial chamber, you must set sail.
In the Bonaventure? Well, it has barely room for three.
Nevertheless, Mr. Spilett, you must load it to the gunwales.
But any reasonable sea would swamp us.
You must trust my belief that there will be no unreasonable sea.
But where would we head for?
Northeast by east, tracing the path you came. Only this time you travel the surface of the earth. Follow the trades, and you will reach the Hawaiian Islands.
That's a wild venture.
Not if you take my charts and the chest I leave you. Find your way home.
And you?
The sands of my life have run out. Once I am back where I have lived in isolation for years, I will be content with what is to come. But you leave fast.
We left the island as we came, leaving every possession with weight behind. Or we sailed bravely away on the Bonaventure, wallowing in the sea. We had been forced there by the prophecy of Captain Nemo when the center of the island started to spout fire and later brimstone, and the whole earth had rolled in a terrifying warning that the island was about to blow up.
Mysterious island, what is it? That life is made to be lived, no matter how we find it, or how it may present itself to us, and that beyond us, there is a special being. Yes, if you want to believe in that, and if you do, you can believe that he can make anything possible, or much more important, that through him, you can make anything possible. If you just try hard enough. I'll be back shortly.
Gonna take a trip?
Gonna haul the trailer.
Gotta run down and pump up the air shocks.
Car ride funny till I hook up the trailer.
Get to where we're going, unhook the trailer.
Should I deflate the air shocks?
Car ride funny if I don't.
If I do,
when we get ready to leave, I'll have to run down and pump up the air shocks. Car ride funny.
Wouldn't it be great if there was an overload device that gave you a good ride, even when you're not carrying a load and never needed adjusting? There is Cargo Coil from Moog Automotive. It's not a shock, but a coil spring engineered to give you a level, comfortable ride for car, van, or light truck. The price isn't a shock either, and there's nothing to adjust. Cargo Coil does it automatically. It adjusts to the load and carries it where it should be carried, in the suspension system. Cargo Coil from Moog Automotive. Moog. M-O-O-G. The right name for wheel-to-wheel security.
When it's so hot, stepping outside is like stepping into a blast furnace. That's the time for Country Time.
Country Time, Country Time. Tastes like that good old-fashioned lemonade.
Country Time lemonade-flavored drink. Not too tart, not too sweet. Natural lemon flavor. When you've got a thirst for the taste of good old-fashioned lemonade.
Country Time, Country Time. Tastes like that good old-fashioned lemonade.
A unique and fascinating man, Jules Verne. Over a century ago, he was opening vistas far beyond the vision of the ordinary man, charting unknown seas and revealing what lay beneath them, ranging across unclimbed mountains, through virgin forests, reaching even deep into the heart of the earth to bring his readers the world of imagination. Where would the rest of us be if the dreamers and the visionaries didn't possess the keys to keep opening new doors to new tomorrows? Thank God for Jules Verne. Our cast included Earl Hammond, Leon Janney, Jackson Beck, and Roger Barron. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
WOR Mystery Theater was also brought to you in part by ShopRite Supermarkets, where you get a lot more for a little less. The preceding program was furnished by CBS Radio. On the WOR community calendar, the Nutrition Project for the Elderly of Middlesex County is making it possible for YM and YWHA of Raritan Valley to serve a kosher midday meal. Make reservations by calling the Y to 201-249-2012. This is WOR New York. Stay tuned now for the news at 8 with Paul McElroy.
Yeah, no, we're not doing news. oh, boy, good stuff. Jules Verne and CBS Radio Mystery Theater. And having wrapped that up rather quickly, I think we have time for some bonus material. Do we not, Dave? It's possible we're Daveless. Okay? Can you hear me, folks? All right. Can you hear me out there on Radio Land? Just somebody in the chat say something. Oh, I'm in a pickle. Oh, okay. Dave says I'm good. I can't hear you. You can't hear me. It's all good. Or you can hear me. Anyway, we got time for some bonus material. And let's play some for ya before we get some kosher pickles. Dave will be right back. There's a kosher cat. no moral that I know of, but I do have Dave returning to the studio, I believe. Could be.
Can you hear me now?
Can
you hear me now?
Yes. We can't.
I was in and I didn't change anything, but somehow I was there, but I wasn't. I saw myself there, and I heard myself talking, but hey, anyway.
That's all right. Neither of us are all here. We're just not all there.
I've never been all there. What are you talking
That's
about?
That's right. But with all this extra time left, let's treat the gang. Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm just aglow here. We've got CW, Linda Lou. The professor was here a moment ago. GGSI Paper, Fox Bane, of course, Vorpal Bite. Everyone, thank you for stopping in and enjoying some old-time radio.
Yep. So what shall we do? Go to the wheel?
Wheel it shall be.
Well, I've lost track of whose turn it is, so why don't you head up there and give a nice tug on that wheel, Dale?
Sure. Let me just heave my bulk up to the wheel and reach to the top here. Give it a spin.
Work. Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Him. I've been petting him.
You've been wiping
getting your hands on it.
Okay, so I've been wiping my hands on him. I couldn't find a rag.
Be ashamed of yourself. Look at that poor thing. Looks like he fell in a tar pit.
Well, he had no business to come sniffing around while I was draining the oil. Put him in the washing machine.
You insane man, I really believe you want to do away with him.
How can you say a thing like that?
Don't fool me, John Simpson. I know what happened to the other cat we had.
What other cat?
The big gray one, Joy Boy.
Joy Boy?
You know, the one you said committed suicide after you caught him in the liquor closet.
He did commit suicide, Blanche. Cats have been known to commit suicide.
They don't hang themselves.
He didn't hang himself. He got his neck tangled in a ball of string, and I was trying to unloose it when you walked in. Don't start making me into a cat killer.
You stop using Nature Boy for a grease rag. How long are you going to be working on that pile of junk?
Till I get it fixed.
You finally get a vacation, and how do you spend it? Under a car.
Well, I'm happy here. Before you came out, it was nice and quiet.
You've got a whole week off from your job. Why don't you do something with it?
What do you want me to do, Blanche?
Go down and collect your unemployment insurance.
You want me thrown in jail? You know I'm getting paid while I'm on vacation.
Stop waving that oil can around. It's pouring all over the seat. Wipe it up, John.
Okay, hand me the cat.
Here, use this song. How much longer are you going to be?
I'm almost through. Grab hold of that wire, will you, Blanche?
This one?
Yeah. Feel anything?
No. Why?
Nothing. I just wanted to see if it was connected to the battery. Oh, take it easy. The battery is dead anyway. Got to get it recharged.
No, you're not. You've squandered enough money on this car.
What are you talking about? The only things I've bought in the last 2 years are a windshield wiper and a crank handle.
If you didn't throw money away on all those fancy accessories, maybe we can afford a decent car.
There's nothing wrong with this car. Anybody will tell you that 1932 was a great year for Hendrick.
And why do you have to fool around with it so much?
I'm not fooling with it. You always have to make these minor adjustments till the car gets broken in. You better move, Blanche, unless you want to get this paint over you.
Are you going to paint the tire?
I have to. The tubes are showing through.
John, if you take my advice, you'll trade this thing in.
I'm not making any trades unless I can get a good deal.
Well, how do you know you can? Have you tried the Smiling Irishman?
I tried the Smiling Irishman.
What did he say?
He didn't say anything. He laughed out loud.
That's because you're not a good businessman. I'll bet my brother-in-law Barney could make a good trade for you.
Barney?
Barney's a shrewd businessman. He can get things from people.
He got plenty from me, all right.
I wish you were more like him. Barney makes good everywhere he goes. Even when he was in the Army, he worked himself up to a field marshal.
He worked himself up to a buck private.
How could he say that? You know very well we got word they made him a field marshal.
He was a private and he was court-martialed. Not field marshal.
Stop yelling. The neighbors are looking.
Well, don't rile me up about Barney. It's the one man I hate in the world more than that cat.
Sorry, John. I just thought we'd do something together on your vacation. Do you know the headlights are on?
Headlights? I thought the battery was dead. I must have had the wires crossed. Boy, what a lucky break.
Now you can give me a driving lesson.
Driving lesson?
John, you've been promising me for 2 years you'd teach me how to drive.
Not today, Blanche.
Why not?
Well, it's such a nice day, I thought I might drive downtown and sneak into the ball game.
Never mind that ball game talk. I know what you're thinking of.
What am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Murphy's Bar and Grill, and I'm not letting you go near that saloon again.
I never go near Murphy's Bar and Grill, and that's the farthest thing from my mind. Why must you always accuse me of being preoccupied with drinking?
All right, forget it. Have you got gas in the car?
Yes, I put a fifth in yesterday. And I mean 5 gallons.
That's fine. Well, are you going to teach me to drive, or aren't you?
Oh, get in.
All right. Now, what do I do?
Just relax. Now, I want to explain a few things first. Teaching a wife to drive requires a great deal of patience and understanding. And we'll get along fine if you'll just listen to me and do as I tell you. If I tell you to put out your hand and slow down, don't step on the gas and speed up. If I say pull over to the right, do it now, not later. If I say there's a yellow light, come to a stop. Don't step on the gas and try to beat it. Because if you get away with it, from then on you'll be speeding, going through life. And I'll get a ticket, and have my license revoked, and it's all your fault. Get out of the car, driver!
you better not do anything. Now, start the motor. Shift the first, let out the clutch, and feed the gas slowly. Have you got that?
Yes.
Start the car.
Well, the seat's too far back.
It's not too far back.
But I can't see the radiator cap.
Why do you want to see the radiator cap?
How else can I aim it?
You steer it. You don't aim it. It's not a weapon. Let's go.
Now, don't rush me. Let's see. Put the clutch in. Shift to first. Set the clutch up. Easy. Feed gas. There. Well, why aren't we moving?
You didn't start the motor.
What motor?
The one that comes with the clutch. What do you mean, what motor?
Don't snap at me.
I'm not snapping. Start the car.
Oh, all right.
Wait a minute. Stop it.
What's wrong? Am I going too fast?
You're not moving. Take your foot off. The motor won't start unless you turn on the ignition.
Where's the ignition?
On the dashboard. There. The key is in it.
Well, why do you have to lock it? Nobody's going to steal your ignition.
All right. You got it started. Now put it in first, let the clutch out easy, and you'll roll along smoothly and slowly. I'm in the glove compartment. Are you all right?
I'm fine. You're not hurt, are you, John?
No, I'm not hurt. But the car's finished. Are you satisfied now?
I just happened to think. Today's Friday the 13th.
Wouldn't have made any difference. I'm a doomed man, Blanche.
I'm sorry, John. Honest, I am.
Let's get out of this thing.
Have we got any insurance?
No.
Please forgive me.
Forget it.
I guess I don't deserve to live. I give you nothing but trouble.
Don't talk, Blanche.
Why don't you punish me? Get rid of me. Other men do it. I once read where a Russian farmer traded his wife for an old cow. Would you do that, John?
Do what?
Trade me for an old cow?
No. But I'd hate anybody to tempt me with a new Cadillac. Come on, Blanche, let's walk home.
Hey, great stuff. From the Bickersons.
Yep, the Bickersons and our Weirdness Really Bad Movie, our sketches, the Home Sweet Home sketches, both the live action ones and the cartoon ones are all in homage to the Bickersons there. So if you ever get a chance to catch any of those, then you'll see a little bit of it there, a little bit.
Yep.
I love the Bickersons. Don Ameche was so fabulous, and Francis Langford. There was a time Don Ameche left and it didn't really work because they brought in somebody else, and there was a time Francis Langford left and Marsha Hunt filled in for a while, and it just didn't work. Right. It had to be Don Ameche and Francis Langford.
I could even, there was almost a hint of Fibber McGee and Molly in their banter to me.
A little bit, but they were never really vicious towards one another.
These guys were brutal.
Right. In a sense, This almost is a little reminiscent, or Honeymooners were a little reminiscent of this in a way, that actually they cared for each other, but they were pretty tough on each other. But they actually loved each other. So
Stay married with children. The battling.
You could see that. Yeah, absolutely. So
the hatred was outward, or contempt, if not hatred. But good stuff from way back when. We probably could even sneak in another tune before we jump into some shameless self-promotion.
Here I have a wooden nickel left from my paycheck.
Oh, okay.
If you want to reach over and grab this and slide that in. The only jukebox that takes wooden nickels.
Yeah, and makes them sound metallic.
Thank you.
Well, now we'd better tune up our instruments, boys, because here comes our own little darling, Anita Gordon. Yes, sir.
Oh, heavenly days, what is all this?
Why, shucks, honey, we're tuning up for your song. You wouldn't want us to play off-key, would you?
Well, no, but in Hezzy's case, how could you tell?
Oh, it comes natural, same as a groundhog knows to look for a shadow.
Well, for my song, can't we just have Ken play the guitar?
Why, sure.
And have Gabe come in on the clarinet.
Clarinet?
And maybe get Gil to pick up a little rhythm on the bass. It's so nice to have a man around the house. Oh, so nice to have a man around the house. Someone sweet who's glad he found you, who will put his arms around you, and his kisses just astound you. It's so nice. Oh, a house is just a house without a man. He's the necessary evil in your plan. There are many things about him you just cannot do without him, though it's just a constant game of cat and mouse. It's so nice to have a man around the house. Oh, a house is just a house without a man. He's the necessary evil in your plan. Someone kind who knows you treasure any simple little pleasure, like a full-length mink to cover last year's blouse. It's so nice to have a man around the house.
And see that? You got two of us here. And one of us, Dave, you got something coming up with the our friends at the Vortex?
Not this Monday, but what we do have coming up very soon, it's heading towards the finishing stages. A brand new Weirdness Really Bad movie show featuring the movie The Shadow Returns, and interesting, very interesting hosting segments, and a lot of fun. So that'll be there for everybody real soon. Also, coming up next weekend, watch Weirdness Really Bad Movie Facebook or my Facebook page, because we have an all brand new episode of Spaceship One going to be released for according to our producer, they're going to be released for a Thanksgiving weekend. A brand new episode of Spaceship One.
All right. Just in time for the holidays. And we do have some holiday fun for you next weekend as we celebrate Thanksgiving with Friday night. We've got some comedy for you. Great Gildersleeve Jack Benny Show with an ostrich for Thanksgiving. Okay. Gildersleeve has his B-Ration book, and our Miss Brooks, Thanksgiving weekend. So some comedy for you on Friday night for your Thanksgiving leftovers, if you will. And then on Saturday, Tarzan. That's right, Tarzan with the story of African Thanksgiving and Challenge of the Yukon with Thanksgiving in the wilderness. So we're going to go a little wild on Saturday night.
Yes, we are. Or into the wild, one or the other. Hey, a quick push. I'd like to congratulate Mr. Mike Mace, one of my collaborators and one of my co-hosts, and like a big brother to me in many ways, because he's always putting me in my place. Oh, he's my buddy. For a portrait he has made of him by Bradley Beard, who does so many of these, all the great horror hosts and such. And that was just released yesterday. I have one supposedly coming very soon. Very, very soon, anytime now. But anyway, congratulations, Mike Mace. It's absolutely hilarious, the portrait of him. So,
and I'll tell you, folks, if you're not familiar with his work, it is indeed an honor to have your likeness made by this gentleman in the manner that he does, as he has become a real student of all the horror hosts all across the internet, our TV screens from days of yore, and everything. And he's doing his best to chronicle everybody.
Fabulous.
David, glad it was your turn. Folks, we got to fly. Thanks so much. We'll see you next weekend, Friday at 6:30. And I'm hoping we get some Vincent in here, at least part
of it. The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone.
Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.
Don't come alone.
Ta-ta.
Okay.
I wonder how long we'll last.
We could get cut out at any time, just because if they snapped up your host like they did yesterday, we were just, I think, in mid-sentence when we lost connection. So
that may happen today, folks. We don't know.
It may happen. So as we jabber along, if that's what happens, and we won't go too long. Saturdays we usually don't, because we do like to tune in to Brother Gar's horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul. As he goes on live, so...
Yeah, which is any second now.
Yeah, he should be up there just about any second. And, oops, no one. Okay. It's interesting show tonight. I think it was a nice little adaption there. But again, like any adaption, whether it be movie or radio... or short story that they turned it into, or however they did it, it's always going to be a little bit different from what the original was.
Yes, and sometimes, you know, original is subjective too, because I think of songs that I grew up with in the 60s and 70s and didn't find out until much later they were remakes of songs from the 40s or the 50s.
Yeah.
And you know, the one you heard first and associated as part of your life, as music will often do, I think that becomes your original.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like
it's going to be very hard for me when I start picking up these silent films, and I mean to do this, Dave. I want to start hosting silent films. And there is a silent 20,000 Leagues from, I think it's 1916, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
It'll be interesting to, review it before I chop it into pieces to host it and see how good it was for its day.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to see that.
Yeah,
being the brave soul you are to host silent movies.
Well, I want to do it because no one else is doing it. That's why I like what we're doing. Very few people are doing what we're doing, Dave, with these old-time
right.
radio shows. Especially
in
the manner
do,
that we do it.
Right, and if they do, it's not the same way. That, you know, they break them up and talk in between and afterwards and stuff. So, yeah, I've heard some where they talk a little bit at the beginning, and that's it. And some where they talk a little bit at the beginning and maybe a little bit at the end. And every week, try to find a little something that's different on some of these shows when we have so many of the same shows, you know, that are great shows, but to find a little bit of factoid here or there about something or something about the production or so. So,
well, Dave, you've been interested in this stuff your whole adult life and even your pre-adult life. Where,
yeah, my teens, yeah. It's really when I got bitten by the bug was in my teens. Although I've always loved radio, I really didn't understand the radio drama or comedy until my teens. And it is. And as always, I thank you for giving us this forum in order to do this.
Well,
because,
I thank you for suggesting it, because honestly, I was looking at kind of doing something like this anyway. One of my former partners tried it for a little while, a very short while, but just not in the way that we're doing it.
Right.
And we must be having fun. We just did show 454.
Yep. And out of that, I was just adding things up here. From the start, we have shared 767 shows, complete shows. We've shared 190 so far this year, Dale. 190 already this year.
Wow.
And I haven't added in the clips for the last couple of weeks yet, but that's coming soon, and we're heading towards about 275 on the clips since we've started. So it's a heck of a lot of radio that we've been here and shared along and enjoyed doing it. There's just so many cool things and stories out there. I honestly believe that the 40s into the early 50s really was the not only was it the golden age of radio, but in order to do these stories, it had to be the king of short the golden age of short stories as well.
Yeah.
Well,
Dave, I think we need to do something special when we get to our 500th show, which should be sometime in the late summer. We're on 454 now, so I figure 46 weeks, grumble, grumble, grumble. Or no, actually 23 weeks. No, it'll be springtime.
Springtime.
Maybe we'll do something fun visually to entice you to listen more and maybe have a nice celebration for our 500th show. Wow. 500.
Yeah, and some of these people like Fogs Bane and who has been with us almost from the beginning, and Gar, who's been with us and even co-hosting with us almost since the beginning as well. And
so many friends and listeners we've made along the way.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. It was really nice everybody showed up tonight. That was...
Yeah, we started out with anybody. I think Fogg showed up just as we were going on. And by the time we were done, we had about 7 or 8 people live. So it was nice to see that grow. And we didn't start the first episode until most everybody was in the room. Linda Lou was pretty late, but other than that, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I was hoping that we would hit 57,000 by the end of the year, and it looks like we have a good shot at it. Halloween weekend was huge. That one couple of days there, we had a lot of listens, folks. A lot of folks going into the archive, digging up old shows, and giving a listen.
Yep, so... We got all kinds of great shows back there, folks, and a lot of great shows coming up as well. So it is just looking forward to all kinds of fun coming up.
Yep. Coming your way. And have a nice Thanksgiving dinner. Don't drink too much turkey.
I try not, but, you know.
Whatever that means.
Actually for us, you know, we have a traditional Thanksgiving meatloaf.
Yeah,
and,
you were saying, Dave, that you always do that, and I think that you have a special guest, don't you?
We have a friend of mine that has been a volunteer at the station for over 20 years, we invite him over, and he will come over again, but he loves my wife's meatloaf, so we always do a Thanksgiving meatloaf. Then my wife and I, we miss the turkey, so we have turkey on Christmas. So we will have the turkey, but not till Christmas.
There you go. Yeah, we get double turkey. Denise has forever been, and we use it. I may have mentioned this on the show before, but we use an old. I can't remember if it's 47 or 49. It still works. One of those old Westinghouse roasters. You know those stand up roasters.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, it's got like the steel body to it, but you can remove the roaster, and the plug looks like it's something that would drive an inspector mad. But it works, and it's been safe, and we've never had a problem with it, and it makes the most beautiful bird imaginable.
Hey, I do want to push thing if people are listening here in the archive. If you did not hear it, Kolchak fan or not, you've got to go back and hear last Saturday's program about the Night Stalker. Special guest Mr. Mark Dowidziak. We even had a half-hour audio treat. Never bothered to bring out just because he was just so fascinating, full of facts.
We didn't have the heart to stop him because he was
no
full info mode, folks, stuff you wouldn't imagine that he experienced and knew and learned about Kolchak the Night Stalker and Darren McGavin. So it is so worth a listen. It really left a special mark on both Dave and I. Dave, I think a bit more. You were blown away by it.
I was completely blown away. I knew the guy had written a book about the Night Stalker, and as a matter of fact, I have one of his books. He wrote that he's written both fiction and nonfiction on the Night Stalker, and it just was an amazing guest. And we'll be just as amazing when we get a chance to invite him back to do a show on the Twilight Zone, because he's also written about the Twilight Zone.
And if he doesn't talk our heads off, we might have some audio treats there. If not, you'll enjoy listening to him.
Well, we definitely will with that one, because we have Rod Serling 1953 radio play that he wrote and produced while he was living down in Cincinnati, also writing television scripts at the same time.
Yep.
So
that's something you don't want to miss. It's going to be coming up. Just lots and lots of holiday fun and good radio. We're not going anywhere.
Not in the near future anyway, but yes.
In spite of crappy internet, in spite of Blog Talk being a little hinky.
I'm not sure, because I was still connected. I could hear you and I could hear the programs, but nobody could hear me, so I was like only half connected at that point.
Your mic was hot. It just didn't.
So it's because we could say it was our equipment or our internet or whatever. But sometimes it just really is also has a little bit of help from the from good old Blog Talk Radio. We think of it fondly because they've given us a wonderful forum here.
For all sarcasm aside, it does what I want to do. I love the fact that there's a live chat, because not everybody wants to call in, but yet they want to participate, and the chat is perfect for that. And we get to kind of feel live how things are working, if what we're doing is engaging or entertaining or not. You know, if sometimes we have to switch gears a little bit, we try to keep it engaging for everyone.
Yep. Well, I think it's about time for me to shuffle on over to Horrible Horror while I'm getting some other things done, and we get next week's shows ready for a Thanksgiving leftovers.
That's right. So join us Friday at 5:30 Eastern, and I'm sorry, at 8:30. P.M. Eastern. That'll be Friday, Black Friday.
5:30 Pacific, yes. That's
with lots of comedy and Thanksgiving.
All right, Mr. Jimmy Durante, it is your turn.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the same, and it could think could do. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
A little practice there.